new path of us.
And now, shining the spotlight on the future of hockey, the World Juniors.
Joshua Wall walks in, got the one.
Major Junior.
This is Logan Stankoven. I play for the Kamloops Blazers.
Hey, it's Matt Potcher from the Guelph Storm.
This is Axel LaRue from the Halifax Mooseheads.
Natai Gauthier. I play for the Quebec Ramparts.
Hey, guys. This is Ty Nelson from the North Bay Battalion, and this is the Pipeline Show.
NCAA.
This is Ryan McAllister for the Western Michigan Broncos.
This is Wyatt Kaiser from Minnesota Duluth.
This is Brock Faber from the University of Minnesota.
The NHL Draft.
This is Adam Fantilli of the University of Michigan.
This is Ryan Leonard. I play for Team USA.
I'm Nate Danielson of the Brandon Lee Kings.
My name is Adam Guyam. I'm playing for Chippewa Steel.
Hi, I'm Christian Sochin. I'm with the Seattle Thunderbirds.
Hey, this is Jacob Fowler, goaltender for the Youngstown Phantoms.
I'm Connor Bedard for the Regina Pats, and this is the Pipeline Show.
And more.
Bring it!
This is the Pipeline Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Pipeline Show. My name is Guy Flaming, and I am thrilled to have you join me once again. The program, of course, brought to you by Wilhauk Beef Jerky, title sponsor for another season and next year as well. There will be a season 20 of the Pipeline Show, and brought to you by Alberta's Best. That is Wilhauk Beef Jerky. Can't win friends with salad. Pick up your jerky at their location in Leduc or Spruce Grove or in West Edmonton Mall, or have it shipped to you by going to WilhaukBeefJerky.com. Any order, any size, anywhere in Western Canada, they will send it to you. Fresh on delivery, absolutely delicious. Your taste buds will thank me for it. Let them know the Pipeline Show sent you. As I'm speaking with you right now, it is Wednesday evening. Why am I doing the show so early in the week? Because the Frozen Four starts on Thursday. That's tomorrow. And you know I'm going to have a Frozen Four preview. So we got to get that out. And the CHL, we're into round two of the playoffs. That begins on Friday. So no reason to wait. So like last week, this week's episode coming out a little bit early. And so we're going to move quickly. Let's get to the playoffs and what the pictures look like in the second round of the CHL playoffs across all three leagues. Baie-Comeau will start at home against the Acadie Bathurst Titans. Cape Breton gets Chicoutimi in round two. Drummondville finally learns who they're going to play. It will be the Sherbrooke Phoenix, who went seven games against the BB Armada. I believe that was the only seven-game series in the entire Canadian Hockey League in the first round. Rouyn-Noranda gets Victoriaville. Those are your four series in the queue. They all begin on Friday. Second round in the Ontario Hockey League playoffs actually gets going on Thursday in three of the four series. So another reason we've got to move up this week's episode. The three that will start on Thursday has Sudbury starting on the road against the North Bay Battalion, the Kitchener Rangers, and the London Knights Connect, arch rivals there. And the Saginaw Spirit will host the Sioux Greyhounds. That should be a terrific series as well. The other one features the Ottawa 67s against the Oshawa Generals. In the queue, I am picking Baie-Comeau and Drummondville to meet in the final. In the OHL, if you remember last week, I said it was going to be Saginaw and Oshawa. Well, the Generals had a tough time in the opening round against the Barrie Colts. Went six games. I might be leaning a little bit to the Sudbury Wolves right now, but I'm still going to say Oshawa just to stick with my original pick. The London Knights and the Saginaw Spirit looked awfully good in round one. And meanwhile, closer to home in the WHL, beginning on Friday, all four series kicking off on Friday night. The Saskatoon Blades are facing off against the Red Deer Rebels, an epic match between the Swift Current Broncos and the Moose Jaw Warriors. In the Western Conference, the number one seed would be the Prince George Cougars. They get the Kelowna Rockets in round two, and a terrific Pacific Northwest battle between the Portland Winterhawks and the Everett Silvertips. Moving quickly, in the Alberta Junior Hockey League, the final is set. It's going to be the Whitecourt Wolverines and the Calgary Canucks. That series is going to start in Whitecourt also on Friday, so busy weekend of playoff action if you're watching junior hockey. To this point in the AJHL playoffs, Calgary has played 11 games, Whitecourt has played 12. Goals for, Calgary has 40, Whitecourt has 41. That's how evenly matched these two teams are. Whitecourt has home ice advantage. Round one of the BCHL playoffs well underway. As I'm speaking with you right now, most series have played three. One has gone four games, and it was a four-game sweep in favor of the Chilliwack Chiefs over the Langley Rivermen. And actually, they're all playing right now. As we speak, games are going on. So by the time this episode airs, those games will be in the books. We'll see how many series are actually making it past the first round. The Alberta division of the BCHL has played game one. They're playing a best of five. That would be Spruce Grove and Okotoks. The winner of that play-in series will get the Brooks Bandits. Meanwhile, Black Falls and Sherwood Park will meet in the first round of the playoffs. Game one between Okotoks and Spruce Grove has happened, and Okotoks took it to the Saints 6-2, the final there, so they've got the first game under their hat already. One more weekend of regular season action in the USHL. The Eastern Conference six teams are locked up, with only seeding left to determine. In the Western Conference, it will either be Lincoln or Des Moines who will qualify in that final spot and have the unfortunate task of taking on the mighty Fargo Force in the first round of the USHL playoffs. A couple of college hockey notes to pass on to you. Matthew Wood, one of those players who has entered the transfer portal. He is entered from UConn and is exiting the portal as a new member of the Minnesota Golden Gophers. So Matthew Wood plays 2 years with the Connecticut Huskies and now a member of the Golden Gophers for probably just one more season, and then he'll get signed and turn pro with the, was it the Nashville Predators that drafted him? Yes, it was. The winner of the Penrose Award for top coach in the NCAA this year is Greg Brown from Boston College. Oh, speaking of players and the Minnesota Golden Gophers, Jimmy Snuggerud has announced that he's returning to college for a third season. As noted in the story from College Hockey News, the announcement was first made on social media by Minnesota's NIL collective, that being Name, Image, and Likeness, suggesting that there was some financial incentive for Snuggerud to return to Minnesota for another season. So it sounds like Snuggerud is making some cash by opting to come back for another year before signing with the St. Louis Blues and starting his professional career. All of the coaches were asked last week during the media conference call how NIL is impacting college hockey. Here's a pretty good example of how it's impacting college hockey. The Minnesota Golden Gophers retaining one of their star players for an extra season. We'll learn this weekend who wins the Hobie Baker Award. The candidates are Jackson Blake, a sophomore from North Dakota who has now been signed by the Carolina Hurricanes. Freshman Macklin Celebrini, Canadian, plays at Boston University, and Cutter Gauthier, sophomore with the Boston College Eagles. Originally drafted by Philadelphia, and his rights very publicly traded to the Anaheim Ducks earlier this season. Who do you think is going to win? Let me know on Twitter, at TPS_Gee. I have three guests for you this week. All of them join me courtesy the Troubled Monk Hotline, the taproom Red Deer, Alberta, where you can go in and enjoy some grub and some beverages that are available exclusively on tap at the tap room. But you can go to any Alberta liquor store, pick up a number of their offerings and products that Troubled Monk produces. It's not just craft beer. That's why they say it's craft beverages worth sharing. Because of course you can get craft beer, but you can get the Troubled Tea. You can get the Epitaph Gin. You can get vodka soda and a variety of spirits as well. Check out troubledmonk.com/shop and see what is available right now. The guests that I have lined up for you, we're going to begin with the Frozen Four preview. Dave Starman, longtime college hockey analyst. He's going to be part of the coverage on Radio 1, Westwood Radio 1, which I believe you can get through SiriusXM. Great guy to pick the brain of when it comes to college hockey, and we got four juggernaut programs. And he does a great job of setting up each matchup and what each team needs to do to have success at this event. From there, we're going to head out to the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League playoffs, as I mentioned, round two beginning this weekend. Willie Palov covers the Halifax Mooseheads, who were swept in the first round, so we'll start there, and then I'll rely on his insight to set the stage for round two of the Q playoffs and beyond. And we'll wrap up this week's episode with Dustin Forbes, the outstanding voice of the Lethbridge Hurricanes. Speaking of sweeps, they were cast aside by the Swift Current Broncos in four straight games. How that happened? Well, we'll ask Dustin about that. Then we'll get his thoughts on the eight teams that are remaining in the four series that will start on Friday. So lots to get to. Let's waste no more time. Dave Starman, talking Frozen Four. He is up first. You're listening to The Pipeline Show, brought to you by Wilhauk Beef Jerky.
Hi, this is David Carl, head coach of the University of Denver Pioneers, and you're listening to The Pipeline Show.
Don, buddy, want to come over and watch the game? I'll make a big salad.
I don't know, man.
Steve, come over and watch the game. I've got a massive salad here.
Yeah, my wife needs me to go shopping with her.
Mike, want to watch the game and eat salad with me?
Who is this?
Did I mention I've got a bunch of Wilhauk beef jerky, too?
I'll be right over.
I'm heading over now.
I'm already at your front door.
Wilhauk beef jerky. Because you don't win friends with salad.
Wilhauk is the home of Alberta's best beef jerky.
In Leduc, Spruce Grove, and West Edmonton Mall.
You're listening to The Pipeline Show with Guy Flaming.
Hey, everybody. An old man's talking.
This is The Pipeline Show, and we're looking ahead to the Frozen Four, which finally gets going on Thursday night. With the national championship game on Saturday. And my guest to tee everything up for me is Dave Starman. Dave, welcome back to the program. How are you?
I am doing great. It's always good to be back on the program. We're going back how long now? Is it 10 years at least?
Well, the show has existed. This is season 19 for the show. I'm sure we were getting you on probably within the first, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. So it's probably 14, 15 years that you've been on the show.
I would think at some point I got to write you guys a check for all the publicity you've given me. It's just been terrific.
Yeah, I think it's got to be the other way around, Dave. Got to be paying you for coming on the show and boosting my ratings.
I appreciate that.
All right. Well, the excitement here as everybody is now probably gathered in St. Paul and getting ready for the Frozen Four. And maybe we'll start with the four teams that are there. And these are four juggernaut programs. Like if you were going to pick four historically the best programs in college hockey, you really can't go wrong with these four. I mean, programs like Wisconsin and North Dakota would have something to say about it, but when you've got BU and BC, Denver and Michigan, you can't go wrong. This has got the potential for being one for the ages, doesn't it?
I think it's a great point, and it's something that's been talked about. And, you know, when you talk about college hockey, this is kind of like a blue blood Frozen Four. Not a lot of offbeat teams are in this one. And, you know, when you talk about those real traditional programs in college hockey, you think you've got, you know, you got Harvard and Cornell, you've got BU and BC, you've got North Dakota, Denver. Now you take a look at the Big Ten, probably 5 of the 7 Big Ten teams between Michigan State, Minnesota, Wisconsin, Notre Dame, right? So there's kind of your big highlight reel brand name program teams. And, you know, then you get the next tier. So you've got, you know, maybe 25% of your top tier teams that are in this thing, and for fan recognition and the casual fan, and the branding is there for, you know, what should be a really well attended, as always, but a well viewed tournament, especially with the amount of NHL draft picks that are in it.
Yeah, a lot of draft picks, a lot of high end players that we'll see in the NHL sooner as opposed to later. And one of the things I like about this group of four, they're all super offensive, talented teams. Like I'm not expecting a 2-1 game here. Although Denver just played 2-1 games in the regionals, I think we could see like some 6-5 games and some 5-4 games. What about you?
You could, and this is going to sound like I'm picking on the goalies, and I'm not, but you could get into some higher scoring games because you've got some goalies here with some flaws. I mean, no goalie's perfect. We all know that, right? But
right.
The goalies here in this tournament, with the exception of Jacob Fowler at Boston College, I think you've got three other goalies that are here with still thinking that they've got something to prove. I mean, Matt Davis for Denver's been really good down the stretch. Matt DeCron's been really good down the stretch. And the kid from Michigan's been really good down the stretch. So, I mean, all three of them have answered some important questions. But, you know, Fowler is a world-class pedigree goalie, world junior kid, national team development program kid. There's a little bit of a difference between Fowler and the other three just in terms of the pedigree and the expectation of what's coming next for him after his college career. So to me, the guy that can steal a Frozen Four if the chips were down is probably him. But you mentioned Denver a second ago. I think Denver is the chameleon. I think they can play any game that gets thrown at them. So I don't know if BC can win 2-1. I don't know if BU can win 2-1. I know Michigan can. So I will tell you that if Denver gets into one of those games, like they got into the regionals where they played teams that weren't really their matchups for them, they're a team that with their back end and their top four D being so elite and how well they defend as a team and how good their centers are defensively and the structure that they play in their own zone. If you're going to look at a team that probably bends and doesn't break when all is said and done, Denver might be that team.
All right. Well, they are playing in the first game on Thursday. They'll be taking on the Boston University Terriers. I'm not going to ask you for predictions, so let's do it this way. If Boston University wins this game, how do you think they accomplish that?
They get to Matt Davis really quickly, and they make Denver chase the game. I think that's going to be a key component for BU. Their special teams lately have been good, but their special teams are not winning them games like they were early on the season. So I think for BU, one of the things that they really have to make Denver do is just defend more than Denver wants to. Denver is a really good possession team, and when they don't have the puck a lot, it gets them a little bit out of sorts. So when you take a look at a couple of their heavier lines, you take a look at, you know, Tuck, Stevens, Kaplan. You got a couple of NHL draft picks and Tuck from Montreal, Kaplan from Philadelphia. That's a big line. Mm-hmm. Kaplan goes 6'3", Stevens goes 6'1", Tuck goes 6'2". I mean, that's a line that can get on, that can get in on the BU defense and really cause some havoc. In the Denver defense and cause some havoc, because where Denver lacks size is certainly in their top four, with the exception of Shai Buium is at 6'3". So I think that one of the key things for BU is, A, how good can they be on faceoffs in the offensive zone, where they've been pretty good all year? Number two is they are up in the top 10 in terms of generating shots off of one draws in the offensive zone. So they've got some quick strike ability there. But I really think that their heaviness has got to be a factor on Denver's defense, because, like I said, Denver, without the puck, can get a little antsy.
What's the key to success for the Pioneers to beat the Terriers?
All right, so now it goes back to Denver's possession game. I don't think there's a team in the country that plays with the puck as well as they do. They are a really good possession team. And what they do, what their specialty is, Denver creates a lot, and you watch them play, and you say to yourself, all right, so they're creating a lot of stuff outside the dots. High rolls, scissors, cycles, all that really good possession-based offensive zone play, which they are great at. And what they make you do is they make you chase them around the offensive zone a lot, to the point where they grind you for a shift. Then they can pull a line change. Now they got a fresh group that comes on. And now that second attack is still beating up on the line that was just out there for their opposition. They wear teams down, especially when they're playing at home in the altitude. So for Denver, it's a matter of what line can be out there in possession that sets their next line up for success, and that is one of the things that they have done very, very well all year.
One of the X factors for Denver would be the health of Massimo Rizzo. I know he didn't play in the regionals. He was kind of questionable to be available. It's been a couple of weeks. Does that maybe make him more probable? I don't know if you've heard if he's available or not.
Talking to the Denver coaching staff 2 weeks ago, or is it 3 weeks ago now, at the Frozen Faceoff, they were hopeful that Rizzo could get back. Nobody was committed to it, but they thought that there was a chance. I don't have any inside information on it, but the Denver staff seemed optimistic that there was a chance that he can get back and play. But in his absence, Tristan Bros is a draft pick of the Pittsburgh Penguins. He's a local kid here. He's right from Bloomington. Mm-hmm. Tristan Bros, who was not much of a center throughout most of his career, has transformed into the number one center between Sam Harris, who's a pick of the Canadiens, and Jack Devine, who was a Hobie finalist, the pick of the Florida Panthers. So Bros has really made up for a lot of what Rizzo brought. Rizzo brings a little bit more grit than Bros, but Bros has become an excellent face-off guy, and he's been a really good defensive-minded centerman for that line, and he's been able to drive that line and create success for Harris and Devine.
Excellent. Well, that's a great setup. We didn't even mention Macklin Celebrini at all, but when you have the nuclear deterrent, I guess, for the Terriers, if you're going to list all the best players in this game, he'd have to be at the top of that list, wouldn't he?
Well, let's go there, because I appreciate you bringing that up and tactfully saying it. But, you know, Celebrini, obviously, we know he is all world. And Shane LaChance has been terrific on that line, along with Jack Harvey. They've been really good. We all know Celebrini's going to be, if not the top pick, he'll be one of the top two.
Right.
Him and Lane Hutson are just two guys that really drive BU's engine. Hutson is great, and here's the best line about Hutson. I talked to Zeke Buium about 3 weeks ago, and you know, those two obviously played together on the World Junior team, played at the program. And I said to him, what's the difference between you and Lane Hutson? And Zeev Joseph, he goes, I know what I'm going to do next, but nobody knows what the hell he's going to do. And that, to me, is the beauty of Lane Hutson. He is so unpredictable. He's so good at getting the puck on a stick, off the blue line, and down the dangerous areas. He's not a big guy, but he's really elusive and he's really slippery. So if Hutson goes off, it could be a long night for Denver. And I guarantee a lot of Denver's plan is going to be making sure that Hutson isn't allowed to get down the middle lane of the ice to kickouts and throw pucks to guys like Celebrini on the flanks.
That's a great line about Hutson. Dave Starman, longtime college hockey analyst, my guest here on the Pipeline Show. Let's go to the other match. That would be Boston College against Michigan. And so much offense between these two. 179 goals this year for BC and 169 for Michigan. The special teams are elite. 34.5% this year for the Wolverines and almost 29.9% for Boston College. That stat alone tells me special teams could be the difference maker in this game for either team.
Let's go to the special teams first, because I like to look at special teams not by goals to chances, but goals to minutes.
Okay.
So in a small sample for Boston College in their last four games, they have 10 power play goals in 26 minutes and 49 seconds, and have taken 24 shots. Pretty good, right? Yeah, I mean, that's about a shot a minute. 10 goals in 26 minutes, I mean, that's good. Goal every 2.5 minutes. That's pretty good. That's a power play that's working.
Yeah.
And five of their 10 goals have been impact goals in the last four games. Now, Leonard had two goals in the win against Quinnipiac, a power play goal that cut the lead to 2-1, and a power play goal that got the game tied up 3-3. If you look at the BU game in the Hockey East Championship, Smith scored to make it 1-0. He scored to make it 2-0. And then Gauthier scored to make it 3-1. So they kept extending leads on their power play. So the Boston College power play has been terrific lately. Michigan now, a little different story. Michigan, in their last four games, they've got two power play goals in almost 16 minutes, tons of shots, 24 shots, but their power play has not been a factor in their last four games, which they went 3-1 in that time.
That's a really interesting stat. I don't know if you've seen the games or have been able to break them down as much, but why? Why has the power play struggled despite their strong percentage on the power play?
I'll tell you what, when you take a look at the teams that Michigan's played, Michigan State is generally a really good penalty-killing team. North Dakota is generally a really good penalty-killing team. Now, one of the things for Michigan which is interesting is, like I said, they've got the two goals in the 15 minutes. So that's 15 minutes over four games, 10 chances. They went one game where they were 1-for-5, one game they were 0-for-1, another game they were 0-for-1. They have not been on the power play a whole lot through those last four games. And they've played three teams that have been generally good penalty-killing teams. So one of the reasons that they haven't been scoring, A, they've run into a couple of hot goalies. B, they've run into a couple of teams that kill penalties pretty well. It's an unfortunate time for your penalty to get a power play to get a little cold.
Yeah.
But I would tell you this, playing against Boston College will give up some chances, and I think Michigan's power play will be much more of a factor in the game that they play against BC than they've been in recently.
Okay, that's interesting. All right, well, let's go in. If Michigan is going to have success against Boston College, what do they need to do?
You know what's interesting with Michigan, and that is they can score. They can score from a variety of places. This is not the decor that they have brought to some other Frozen Fours, which is just off the charts high end with a guy like Luke Hughes on it. But Seamus Casey, I know he missed the last game of the regionals. I think Seamus Casey is a really special defenseman. We've talked about Zeev Bowie, and we've talked about Lane Hutson. We've talked about some of the elite defensemen, the NCAA. You know, this kid is pretty darn good himself, and he can see the ice really well. He can make plays. He gets the pucks in the really good spots on the ice, especially coming out of his own zone. So I think that Casey is going to have to be a huge part of what goes on here. Now, up front, they've got a couple of lines. Actually, they got three lines that I think are really, really good. Dylan Duke has been on a tear lately on that third line with T.J. Hughes and Nick Molenauer. Then you get that second grouping. Frank Nazar's in the middle. He is a face-off machine. He is really good 5-on-5. He creates a ton of chances. And then you get that big line with Rutger McGroarty, Gavin Brindley, and Garrett Shifsky. Mm-hmm. To me, Gavin Brindley was the Big Ten Player of the Year. This kid is special. I think he was as big a part of the U.S. winning the World Junior Championship as any player on that roster. And I think Brindley and McGroarty have to be not only big, but I mean, they've got to be impactful shift by shift by shift for Michigan to win this game, because Michigan, I think defensively, could be a little leaky. So for Michigan, I think it's kind of like if they can get the four first, it puts them in a good spot.
Meanwhile, you've got Boston College. They are the number one ranked team in the nation coming into the national tournament and obviously into the Frozen Four. I guess some people would say it's their tournament to lose, but when you have four teams this good and it's a one and done sort of event, it's not a best of three, it's not a best of five, anything can happen. So for Boston College to win against Michigan, what is the key to their success?
I want to go back to one thing you just said. Everybody thinks it's BC's tournament to lose. I disagree. I think it's Denver's tournament to lose because they bring the most experience here of any team. And like I said, I think they're the best defensive team. So I think they're probably the leader in the clubhouse. That being said, here's the beauty of Boston College, and here's how they can win not only this game but this whole thing. BC can be really average for 50 minutes and then have a really good 10 minutes and win the whole thing.
Right.
Like, that's how good they are offensively. It's scary. And when you break them down just a little bit, Cutter Gauthier had a tremendous season. Now, remember, he's not playing with Perreault, Smith, and Leonard. Like, he's on a different line, and he really helped carry that line. He's a really skilled centerman. He's a big physical specimen who I think his game has evolved over the course of the year. He's not just a pure shooter. He's really become, you know, I used the term chameleon before. He has become a chameleon in terms of the fact that he can play that game where they depend on him to shoot and score. But he can also play that game where he can draw coverage and then move pucks to guys that all of a sudden get forgotten about and become a better assist and better playmaker. So I think Gauthier is a factor. That line with Perreault, Smith, and Leonard, like I just talked about, they have been as good as any line in the country, and then the depth below them, real good. Fortescue can really move the puck well. He's a New York Rangers pick. And they got some guy, Adam Manidian is another guy that really can get up and play, move pucks, get some pucks in the front of the net, great speed. For BC can win this game because, A, they got the best goalie in the game in Jacob Fowler, who's a rock star. They are really good in their top six. They got a guy like Fortescue that can really move pucks. I just think that for BC, their quick strike ability and their ability to score ugly goals, they do not get enough credit for scoring greasy goals. Of the four teams that are here in their last four games, no team has scored more goals net front on rebounds than in the grease pan than Boston College has. That, I guarantee you, is something you wouldn't hear anybody say about BC.
Dave, I'm curious. You're a coach. This is a question I wanted to get into the media conference call last week for all the coaches. It's kind of a cliche, but when you always hear a coach say, or a player, we're focused on executing our game plan, playing our game, and if we do that to our ability, we're confident that we're going to win. Is that cliche, or is that really how teams go into an event like this? Without really, you're not bothered with the team that you're playing against. You're more focused on executing your game plan. Is that just cliche?
It's a great question, and it's not cliche. To me, if you're preparing your team as a coach, you want your team mostly focused on what your team is all about. You'll show them a little bit power play PK tendencies of the other team, maybe some breakout tendency stuff, but not a lot. Because by this point in the season, you've got to so believe in what you do
right,
that what anybody else does becomes a little bit irrelevant. The two guys or three guys in your group that are more concerned with the other team than your team are your two assistants and your video guy. Those are the guys that are kind of keeping an eye on some of the trends of the other teams so that in game there are things they might be looking for where you might need to make a slight adjustment. But I'll give you the best example to answer your question really well. 2 years ago, when Michigan played Denver, Denver put together a plan based on A, how they play to keep Michigan a little bit off balance. They got Michigan offsides more in the first period than Michigan had been in the last month of the season.
Wow.
And it was all because of how they stacked the line, how they their backside pressure, how they deflected everything wide, and Michigan's skill guys couldn't figure it out. And they were offsides all night and got them out of their rhythm. So like I said, it's the two assistants and the video guy that are more worried about the other team. The head coach and the players are basically focused on who they are.
Interesting. Dave, you got it. Before I let you go, a thought on who's going to take home the Hobey Baker this year?
Wow, that's a good question. And it was a great call with the Hobey committee as we discussed all the players. And it was one of the more livelier calls that I've been on. And there are a lot of really good players on it. And obviously the most talk I generated with the three that are in the Hobey hat trick. Frank Ceratori, to me, the coach at Air Force, made one of the great points on the call of all time. And he's like, he looked at Celebrini and he looked at Jackson Blake and he said, those guys literally gapped half of their, if not more, of their teammates in terms of points.
Right.
Like, think about how many points they had as opposed to, A, the next guy in line, and then most of their teammates. Those guys doubled just about everybody on their teams. And Celebrini didn't have the same offensive gifts surrounding him depth-wise that Gauthier and Blake did. Now, that being said, I don't think there's any guy of the three that gets the puck with possession to the front of the net and scores goals like Blake does. And as I've told people, in the NCAA, going to the net's not a hobby. It's a hazardous occupation. So there had to be some credit there too. And Gauthier's game, to me, the evolvement of it has been unbelievable. My gut feeling is Gauthier is going to win this thing, but those are three guys that could be 1A, 1B, and 1C. And if they made it a three-way tie, they'd all be deserving.
Fair enough. Hey, Dave, this has been terrific. I always appreciate it when you make time for the Pipeline Show. And I was glad that we got through a calendar season here and was able to finally get you on before it was all said and done. Thanks for doing this.
Oh, it's always my pleasure. And keep up all the great work, because what you do for college hockey is really important.
That was Dave Starman, good friend of the Pipeline Show. And man, very kind of him to say that at the end there. Always appreciate when he's able to make time to come on the show. I think he's the best studio analyst that hockey has at any level. I think he has a way of breaking down the game in terms that the casual fans can easily digest and understand. And I really appreciate how he's able to educate everybody that's listening. Doesn't talk down to the audience, but explains things for newcomers and for veteran watchers of the sport as well. Really appreciate Dave Starman. You can hear his contribution for the Frozen Four by listening to Westward One Radio. And near the end there, what I was talking about, I kept saying, is it a cliche? That was not the word I was looking for. I was trying to say, is that lip service was the expression I was trying to get to. I think he knew what I meant, but I liked his answer about that as well. You know what? I thought, is it just lip service that teams say, no, we only focus on what we're doing and don't really game plan for the opposition? That's what I was trying to ask, is if that is just a lip service sort of answer, or if coaches actually mean that. So I appreciate Dave's thoughts in that regard. Frozen Four starts on Thursday with Boston University and Denver, and then Thursday evening, Boston College takes on the University of Michigan. Who are your picks? You know, I picked Denver to be national champions, so I'm happy to see that they're in the Frozen Four. Boston College was my other pick that is actually still in the tournament. I think I had Minnesota and North Dakota as the other two who didn't make it in. But regardless, I think any combination of these four teams playing in the national championship on Saturday, it's going to be a great tournament. I wish I was there. A reminder, all the Campus Report segments, anytime we talk about college hockey on this show, that is brought to us by College Hockey Inc. If you're a player or you have one in your family, there are things you need to know which can affect your NCAA eligibility. Why don't you get in contact with Mike Snee or anyone at College Hockey Inc. Use their website as a resource, and they'll answer any questions that you might have. Speaking of tournaments, the CHL playoffs are now into round two. We're going to head out to the east coast of Canada and talk to Willie Palov, who writes for the Chronicle Herald in Halifax. First round of the playoffs in the queue didn't work out so well for most of the Maritime-based teams. We'll ask Willie about that and get set for round two. That's next here on the Pipeline Show, brought to you by Wilhock Beef Jerky.
Cullen down the wing. Centers. Sprung. He scores! Daniel Sprung has his first NHL goal.
Hey, this is Daniel Sprung from the Charlottetown Islanders, and you're listening to the Pipeline Show. I saw him dancing there by the record machine.
Been about 17. Passion, talent, development. NCAA hockey offers all that, and its players graduate at a 93% rate. Trevor Zegras.
And they score on the lacrosse move.
Jake Gensel.
Gensel banks it towards the goal. He scores.
Kale McCarr.
He scores.
Stars on campus before the NHL stage. Whether you're a fan or a player, nothing compares to college hockey.
My goodness.
Visit collegehockeyinc.com and follow at College Hockey.
You're listening to The Pipeline Show with Guy Flaming.
All right, thumbs up. Ready, let's do this. Leroy Jenkins!
back on the Pipeline Show with Keith Flaming, brought to you, of course, by Wilhauk Beef Jerky, Alberta's best beef jerky. You can get it in 3 Edmonton and area locations or go to their website at wilhaukbeefjerky.com. Time to get up to date with the playoffs in the Quebec Maritime Junior Hockey League, and unfortunately didn't go so well for some of the teams in the Maritimes. To bring us up to speed is Willie Palov from the Chronicle Herald in Halifax and Saltwire as well. Willie, welcome back to the program. How are things?
I'm good. Good. It's always good to talk to you guys. How are things out there?
Not too bad, although in the same situation as you now with no playoffs in our backyard. But at least the Mooseheads made the playoffs this year. The Oil Kings were not involved. But shockingly, a 4-game sweep to eliminate the Halifax Mooseheads by Bathurst. Did anyone see that coming?
I thought it was going to be a close series because Bathurst actually beat them the last 3 games of the regular season. Bathurst won, and they were all super low scoring. Like, I think Halifax might have scored a total of 2 goals.
Wow.
That's a bit of a flag, right? And but no, I certainly wouldn't have said sweep, and I didn't even expect them to win. But you could also tell right from game one that Bathurst was really on it. You know, Gordy Dwyer, their coach there, just had them playing like incredibly organized and tough hockey, especially in neutral zone and at their own blue line. Like, the Mooseheads just could not get over the blue line to set up and eventually score. So, you know, they only had 6 goals in the whole series. So as much as, yeah, the Mooseheads flopped, I do think a lot of the credit goes to the T-Town. They're just playing some great hockey right now.
How much of it had to do with Halifax's maybe poor performance, if we can call it that? How much of it had to do with maybe a lack of a full roster? They didn't have all their guys.
Yeah, well, and the 2 guys they didn't have are pretty much their 2 best players, mm-hmm. I suppose, outside of their goalie, Mathis Russo, who people know from the World Juniors. But yeah, you know, Jordan Dume was the MVP in the league last season. And sort of the long story, came back from World Juniors, needed sports hernia surgery, had that. And then about a month ago, while he's recovering, gets arrested for drinking and driving. And that was a huge distraction, as you can imagine, internally and externally. And then he's suspended for 5 games by the league and the team for that. And the night before he's supposed to come back, he hurts himself again. Mm. 2 abdominal tears. So, you know, another core injury related or unrelated. It just took all the wind out of their sails at the last minute. But just as bad was their captain, Jake Furlong, Team Canada defenseman that people would remember as well, hurt his shoulder late in the year. And then right before the series started, announced they had to have surgery and he's gone. So, you know, you lose 2 really important leaders like that, but also in Jordan's case, an especially good power play player. The Mooseheads didn't score a single goal in the power play, so you can draw your own conclusion pretty quickly from that. And it just kind of went into a tailspin after that. Just, you know, as much as they tried, they just couldn't rally themselves.
Well, the disappointment for the Maritimes didn't stop at Halifax. Charlottetown also lost in the first round. Now they were, you know, the lower seed in their series, so that wasn't a surprise. But the Moncton Wildcats also getting upset. I know you were covering the Moosehead series, but what were your thoughts on what happened there with Moncton?
Yeah, you know, a lot of parallels there. And I don't know if you saw, but their coach let coach yesterday, I think. Mm-hmm. Dan Lacroix, very, very good coach. You know, no ill will, I don't think, on either side. But they were really good under him for, I think he was in his 5th season, came in midway, I think 5 years ago, did a great job having them overachieve for a couple of years, and they had a good year, but they just didn't look right the last couple of weeks or months of the season. And obviously didn't play well if you're going to get swept. But again, the reverse is also true in that series, and that Chicoutimi was, they're a very young team, but with extremely good blue chip players, 4 first round picks last year, 2 the year before in their lineup, including Maxim Massey, who will be probably the top drafted player of the league this year. So they were like a lot of these young teams playing really well as they matured and actually won, I think it was something like 20 of their last 24 games of the season. So They're just peaking, right? And Moncton just couldn't handle that, weren't having their own problems. And yeah, you see a spiral there too.
All right. So the hope for the Maritime now falls to Cape Breton. Do you include Bathurst as a Maritime team? I know they're from New Brunswick. Do they still count as Maritime?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we count them. We don't count Newfoundland. That's Atlantic Canada, but New Brunswick. So, yeah. But, of course, Bathurst, the reward for upsetting a team, being a low seed, is you get the best team in the league, Baie-Comeau Drakkar. We'll see. They're playing really well. They actually beat Baie-Comeau late in the season.
Okay.
It could be a close series, but, the Drakkar are stacked, and they're very well coached, and heavy, heavy favorite. But you're right. Cape Breton had an awesome first round. They won in five games, but blew Rimouski out in the first two, and Rimouski played well, to be fair. Just the Cape Breton right now, just a lot of balance in their lineup. Their high-end guys are doing high-end stuff. Their bottom six playing great, great goaltending, and the defense is really good. And they've had some hard luck in Sydney with their teams in the last, probably a decade. Mm-hmm. So the best part was they were pretty close to capacity in their rink and loud too. So it's nice to see that because they've had some tough times. They haven't done much of anything in the playoffs ever really, and especially lately. So unfortunately they draw that Chicoutimi team I'm talking about. So it's going to be two hot teams going at each other. But there is geography involved. If Cape Breton can get those first two at home, and then go back to Chicoutimi, we'll see. But that's going to be a great series.
All right. Well, we'll look forward to that. On the other side, it's in the second round, it'll be Drummondville and Sherbrooke. And Rowan Noranda will take on Victoriaville. I know Drummondville's been really good in the second half of the season. Sherbrooke needed seven games to move on. But how do you size up that matchup?
Yeah, Drummondville's the heavy favorite in that one. If anyone remembers last year, Sherbrooke was pretty loaded up for a run, got to the semis, and all four teams who made it that far were pretty equal. So no shame in them not getting past that round. And they sort of sold off a little, but not all the way. So there's still some key players and key positions, but they just don't have the depth of Drummondville. And the biggest factor that could change it maybe is, Drummondville lost Maverick Lamoureux right before the playoffs started. He's gone for the year. He's their top defenseman, outstanding leader, character kid, first round pick of the Coyotes. So that definitely hurts. But even with that said, they've got tremendous depth too, and they're playing really well. So, it would be, if it went long, that would be a little bit of an upset. That they shouldn't have too much trouble there in Drummondville.
Now, Victoriaville and Roy Noranda, the Huskies, I mean, they only finished 2 points back at Drummondville, so they seem to be right there at the top of the heap in the queue. I think, third overall? Looking to the next round, if we can project that far, you think Drummondville moves on pretty easily. If they meet the Huskies, is that a coin flip series?
Well, yeah. I mean, Ruin Rand's got to get through Victoriaville first.
Sure.
An underrated team. They won the league title, I guess if you want to call it that, back during that weird COVID year.
Yeah.
And a big reason they did, they have Carl Millette, who I think is an outstanding coach. And they sort of low key loaded up at the deadline. So they have impact players and they've got a really good goalie. So there's potential to steal games with that kind of a mix. And over in Rouyn Noranda, they're just stacked. Like they've one of these sort of prototypical Quebec teams that load up with a bunch of players for a big 1 year run. And sometimes what happens is it's hard for a coach to bring that group together. So they actually changed their coach not that long ago, like I want to say less than 2 months ago. So that's the X factor there. But on paper, it's definitely Rouyn Noranda's series to lose. I get back to your original question. It just occurred to me. Yeah, if it is Rouyn Noranda and Drummondville, that would be a great series. But I do think there's crossovers involved. The conferences cross over at that point. So you're going to have Baie-Comeau in the mix. And then, also the winner of Cape Breton and Chicoutimi. So the winner of that series would be the lowest seed. And if Bakemo goes through, they'll play. But you're right. Yeah. So it would work out. It would work out that if it's Ruin Aran and Drummondville, they'll go at it. And that would be it. That'd be a terrific series too.
Boy, eventually when the conferences do come together, I wonder, is the potential there for Roy Noranda and Cape Breton? I mean, you got to have the most Eastern-based team and the most Western-based team still in the mix. And how much would travel come into play if those two teams, maybe not necessarily go head-to-head because then it balances out. But just with those two teams, how much travel can come into play here in the queue?
Oh, for sure. And, you know, if you pulled up Google Maps and put Baie-Comeau on there too, they're on the opposite side of the St. Lawrence River, right, way up in the eastern part of Quebec. You can't get there really on a bus, unless, at least for a maritime team, without crossing over on a ferry. They would be probably all flying if it's Cape Breton and anybody. And Drummondville and Chicoutimi are kind of in the middle of the province, but you're right. If you had four corners, you'd have three of them covered, that's for sure, with Baie-Comeau, Bruin, Noranda, and Cape Breton. It would be, yeah, major, major travel.
Everybody in the standings has been looking up at the Dakar pretty much all season. What is it about Baie-Comeau that makes them so strong?
You know, the funny thing is, I'm not entirely sure they saw this as their go-for-it year when they started.
Wow.
But they had assembled a really good group of blue-chip players, and they had some kind of kids who were sort of sleepers come out of nowhere, including like Raoul Boilard, who's one of the other top prospects for this year's draft. But for them, like, they're extremely well coached, very organized. And what I like most about the way they coach this team to where they are is they improve players from within. Like, I watched their defense evolve over the year from some players who were borderline project to now are really good players. In addition to that, team wise, they're just super organized and structured, and they play hard, and they don't have really what I see as any glaring weakness. And the other thing too is, for me, I would say their rink is the hardest in the league to play in. It's small, it's really loud, and the fans are really into it and right on top of the ice. So they'll have home ice for as long as they're alive. That's another huge advantage. And a smaller market team, too. I love those stories, you know, the Ruin Arandas and Baie-Comeaus and these other teams. Mm-hmm. To go all the way, I think it's so great for junior hockey.
Yeah, Shawinigan not that long ago in the queue. And yeah, I think you're right. Small market franchises across the CHL, we've seen it here in Swift Current and Prince Albert in recent years as well, that they can compete with the big market teams. I think that's great to see.
Yeah, I love it. I mean, you know, of course, you've got your flagship franchises in all three of the leagues, you know, Halifax and Quebec and Moncton, a few others. But yeah, you get these outpost towns with these super intense fans. It's just, I think it's great. And these kids, too, that are happy to report to those places. I don't know what the experience is like out west, but, sure, you know, not everybody wants to play in a town of 50,000 people when they can play in a city. But the guys who show up and embrace it, I've at least the ones I've ever talked to, all end up having a great time and a great experience. And then it does, I think, give you something of a chip on your shoulder. So when you do win, it's pretty gratifying, right?
I think the bigger question out here, at least, it's not going from a big city to a small town. It's more going from Victoria or Vancouver, where there's no winter, going to Prince Albert or Brandon, where you're going to be playing in minus 30 at some parts of the year and experiencing actual Canadian winter for the first time. Willie Palov is my guest. Another hat that you wear, Willie. I know you do some scouting with the Redline Report and have for a long time. Are you still doing that?
I am. Yeah, we're into the fine tuning stages with our list. You know, going through one last review of everyone in our region. So, we just did our Quebec prospects, I think, 2 issues ago. And, of course, we'll have our draft guide coming up in June. So not an especially strong year out of this league.
Right.
There may not even be a first-rounder. Probably the guy with the best chance is Massé, who I mentioned before. Had a good second half. Good playoff so far. Could sneak into, say, the 20s. But, you know, there's some decent talents in the second and maybe third round range, but yeah, unfortunately, not a ton up top, and not really, I would say, a lot of overall depth either.
We haven't seen a roster for the U18s for Canada yet. Anybody from the Q or Eastern Canada you think could be on that team?
I'd have to think about it. Is all these teams getting eliminated? You got to look at who those players are in that age group. Off the top of my head, I know that Owen Phillips here in Halifax was sort of a borderline candidate for the summer team. I wouldn't say had a great season, but he'll get a good reference probably from Cam Russell, the GM here, who was the GM of Team Canada for the Ivan Hlinka. He's a possibility. If they're looking at underagers, I'm trying to think. There's a kid in Blainville, Boisbriand, last name Villeneuve. He's Xavier Villeneuve. He's a good player, but again, it would probably boil down to what's happening out in your league and in the OHL, where mm-hmm. they have a pool of only the players who are eliminated. So it's always a bit of a kind of patchwork team, but there might be a couple.
Okay, well, we'll watch for that too. And you said, when is the final list for Redline coming out? Do you know?
Well, you know, we usually publish a couple weeks before the draft, so that'll be earlier, mid June.
Okay.
We'll still have a May issue to come. The April one's on its way now, and of course the draft issue's got 100 plus bios and all kinds of different categories and mock drafts. Of course, the huge list and a bunch of other stuff. But that, if you buy one issue, that's the one you want. That's for sure.
Great stuff. What else do you have coming out in the near future? Whether it's for Saltwire or for the Chronicle Herald, what do you have coming up?
Well, I don't know how relevant it is to your listeners, but we're going through what should be a change in ownership here soon, probably in the next month or 6 weeks. They have hit some financial hard times, so internally, that's what we're watching. There's no real hockey to follow right in my market, but I am, as I mentioned, quite curious and hopeful for the Eagles. There's some good people that have worked hard up there for a long time, including their owner, Erwin Simon, to really put a good product on the ice and just hit with a lot of hard luck over the years. Bad timing and, whatever you want to say, but I would love to see some full houses up there. Their rink holds, I think, just a shade under 5,000, like maybe 4,500. Some nice local kids on that team, including a kid from our backyard named Jacob Newcomb, who had cancer in the first half of the season.
Right.
So those are the kind of things when I get into the off season, I like to keep an eye on. And, outside of the day-to-day grind of having a beat to cover, you like to see nice people do well. So that's one for me to watch anyway.
You were mentioned about Moncton firing their coach. I imagine they're going to want to replace him and find somebody new soon because the Q draft is coming up too, isn't it?
It is, yeah, and it's in Moncton. So that's in 2 months. So you know how it goes. The turnover starts as soon as the dominoes start to fall. There'll be some pro people available, I'm sure. There'll be people from other markets. I don't know if they go young. I'm not really sure. Robert Irving, the owner there, he likes the idea of having people who are very qualified. Going back as far as, John Torchetti here and Ted Nolan, guys who were NHL coaches. And then, of course, Stan Lacroix came back to Moncton from the NHL to coach. So whoever he gets will have some sort of profile. And they're a team that should be even better next year. This was not what I would say is their go-for year either by any means. So they'll have a good team next year. And it's a Memorial Cup year in the Quebec League. So Moncton will be one of the places to watch next year.
When it comes to coaches out there, shouldn't Gardner McDougall be on the top of everybody's list? Or has he kind of removed himself from any of those conversations just because he seems to be cemented in at UNB pretty well?
Oh, yeah. I mean, everybody's been begging Gardner to coach their team for, for real, coming up on 20 years. But he's got such a great situation in Fredericton. He's happy there. He's got a great program, as anyone who follows that hockey knows. I mean, they literally didn't lose the game this year. I think he's involved with the U18 team. So he dabbles sometimes. And of course, he did take the St. John Sea Dogs to the Memorial Cup a couple of years ago after they fired their coach. You know, but for him, I don't know what it would take to get him out of there. Cause I would even imagine there's been some interest at the pro level, but who knows, maybe if Moncton, made a strong enough pitch, he might think about it, but it would surprise me, put it that way.
Well, money talks. And I recall, Mr. Irving seems to have some.
Yes. Some, yeah. The Irving family along with the McCain family, almost all in New Brunswick. So, yeah. Maybe. I mean, he's. I'll say this about Robert Irving. He's not afraid to swing for the fences. I mentioned Ted Nolan before. I mean, that was after Ted had coached the Sabres, and they were hosting the Memorial Cup, and he just kept after him. And yeah, there you go. He came back, and they won the league championship, lost in the championship, Memorial Cup championship to Quebec. So. It's happened before. It could happen again. Maybe if there's any way they can get Gardner McDougal, then that's the ultimate home run, as far as I would say.
Willie, this has been terrific. I really appreciate your time. Thanks for doing this once again. I guess we'll chat maybe in the fall.
Thanks, Guy. Always great talking to you.
Longtime Halifax Mooseheads beat reporter Willie Palov with his thoughts on the queue to this point and the next couple of rounds for the Quebec Maritime Junior Hockey League. What do you think? Who's going to go the distance? Can anybody take out Baie-Comeau? Maybe it's Drummondville. I think Drummondville is probably the closest team with the ability to take down the Drakkar, to sink the Drakkar. But you tell me. You might be closer to the queue than I am out here in Alberta. You can hit me up on Twitter at @TPS_Guy. We got one more segment to go this week, and it'll be the Western Hockey League into the second round. Dustin Forbes is the play caller for the Lethbridge Hurricanes. And we're going to cover a lot of ground with Dustin, not just the WHL, little Alberta Junior Hockey League talk as well. Why? We'll find out when we come back. You're listening to The Pipeline Show, brought to you by Wilhauk Beef Jerky.
I'm Brickley Catton of the Spokane Chiefs.
Far pushes ahead to Catton. Catton making a nice move, coming free now, driving to the net. Catton out front, shoots, and scores! Oh, Brickley Catton, the magician! And Spokane with a 5-3 lead. Oh, my! Berkeley Cat. Enjoy him, Spokane.
And this is the Pipeline Show. She's a modern day Medusa.
But her gaze is even worse. I race through the crowded stadium with sweat. Pouring a glass of crisp, cold beer refreshes my webpage, but the computer crashes into another car who instinctively grabs the release on my chute and hits the bedside alarm. Apparently, it's time to wake up.
Ignite imagination. Advertising on The Pipeline Show works. Who listens to The Pipeline Show? People like you. Share the story of your business with targeted customers. Contact Guy directly at guy@thepipelineshow.com.
You're listening to The Pipeline Show with Guy Flaming.
He fights like an old lady.
Final segment to go on this week's episode of the program, and we are going to look ahead at round two of the Western Hockey League playoffs. Quick reminder, the Pipeline Show brought to you by Wilhauk Beef Jerky. It's Alberta's best. 3 Edmonton and area locations or wilhaukbeefjerky.com, and they will ship it to you anywhere in Western Canada. Wilhauk beefjerky.com. Not like the bird. All right, we are heading to Lethbridge. And we're going to chat with Dustin Forbes. Dustin, welcome back to the program. How are you?
Gee, thanks. I'm bored, but otherwise good.
I hear you. Hey, at least your club made the playoffs this year.
Yeah, that's true. But as you know, and anybody that does hockey broadcasting for a living, it's a prep day or a couple of prep days and then a game day and then a prep day and then a game day and a game day. And then all of a sudden your season abruptly ends. It's been a week since we were eliminated, and it feels like it's been a month because I haven't had a whole lot to do.
So, I hear you.
A little bored, but at least the weather's getting better. So that makes things a little bit easier to stomach.
Well, I did hear a rumor. Are you not now the voice of the Calgary Canucks out of the AJHL? Didn't you fill in and do a game there?
I did, yeah, last Friday. I did their clinching game in the second round. They beat Drumheller in 5 games, and they've asked me back for the AJHL finals. So at least I have something on the go. to look forward to. So I'll be on the mic for the Calgary Canucks on Tuesday and Wednesday of next week as they play the Whitecourt Wolverines in the Alberta Junior Hockey League final. So a little something to do on the side.
That's Andrew Peard's old team, the Whitecourt Wolverines. So look at that.
That's correct.
An AJWHL connection there. So your business cards now reads, have Mike will travel.
Yes, that's pretty much right. Yes. Available for hire.
That's it. Is that a big challenge to go to suddenly call games for a team that I'm assuming you haven't seen the Calgary Canucks play all that time that you've been down in Lethbridge and now preparing for another team? That's got to be a neat little challenge.
Yeah, I like the challenge too. I mean, one of the things, calling the hockey games is that's the bread and butter, but I really love the prep side of putting a broadcast together and getting to know the team and the history and the players and their history and things like that. So I got a call at about 6:30 last Thursday, albeit from Dave Dawson, who of course took over for Andrew at the back half of the year with the Oil Kings there, who runs HN Live.
Yeah.
And was like, hey, this opportunity is up tomorrow. Are you doing anything? I was like, well, I was supposed to be in Swift Current for Game 5, but that didn't really happen. So yeah, I'm up for it. So spent 3 or 4 hours Thursday night prepping and kind of trying to get familiar with the teams. And you're right, it was the first Junior A game I'd broadcast in 11 years since my time with Couch and Capitals before I accepted the job in Lethbridge. So it took me a little bit to get comfortable. Certainly during the game, the first period was a little bit uncomfortable at the start, just because I've never seen these players play. I don't know their names off memory.
Yeah.
But as the game went along, it was like riding a bike, and it ended up being a really good game right down to the wire. And Calgary won with a couple of minutes left to book their ticket to the final. So it was fun. I do like that prep aspect. So it was fun to kind of get acquainted. And I kind of joked on Twitter. I said, I've got the Western Canada Junior A trifecta now, because I called games in the Saskatchewan Junior Hockey League with the Laurent Isles for a year, did 1 year with the Couch and Capitals in the BCHL, and now I've got an AJHL game. So it's just the NJHL that I haven't dabbled in.
Wow, well traveled. LaRange. I can't even imagine what that season would have been like for a guy. You're from BC, aren't you, originally?
I am. Yeah, I am. And when I got the LaRange job, and I don't know, we're going way off topic, but when I got the LaRange job, never in my life had I left British Columbia, because I didn't grow up with a lot of money, so we didn't do a lot of travel. So I'd never even left BC, and had lived on the West Coast all my life, Vancouver Island and Vancouver. Wow. And so it was a bit of a shock culturally, but I learned a lot, both, you know, about the world and how the world is, and different cultures and the game as well. So it was a difficult year, but it was a really big year for me and my development as a person, but also as a broadcaster too, when I was in LaRange. So, it was a tough year, but I look back fondly on that, experience in my life, because, it really, helped shape me and get me to ultimately where I'm at now.
Culture shock. How about climate shock?
That too. Yes. The first really cold day. I remember one day, I lived maybe a 5-minute drive from the radio station. I did the play-by-play for the LaRange Ice Wolves, but I did the morning sports on NBC Radio, the Mississippi Broadcasting Corporation. And one day it was minus 45 without the wind chill. I think it was minus 53 with the wind chill. And, BC, soft BC guy, I had parked my truck and the emergency brake froze.
Wow.
To the truck. And so I woke up and it's 5:30 in the morning. I have to get to do a sports cast for 6:30, my first cast. And how the heck am I going to get to work? So I called my people and nobody answered. I didn't know that there was a cab in town, one cab. And so I walked, and that's the coldest I've ever been. And I hope no one ever has to deal with that, because it was brutal. I had like icicles from my beard and my face. It was awful. So yeah, culture shock, but climate shock as well, big time.
Dustin Forbes, the voice of the Lethbridge Hurricanes, my guest here on the Pipeline Show. All right, let's get to business. So the Western Hockey League playoffs, we're off to round two. Before we get to the final 8 teams in the 4 series that will kick off this weekend, reflect on the opening round for Lethbridge, a four-game sweep at the hands of the Swift Current Broncos. I think most people probably picked the Broncos to win that series, but I don't know anybody who thought it would be a sweep. But what happened?
Yeah, Swift Current, they're a good hockey team, and they're running on full cylinders. At least they were in the first round. Now, they, as we speak, they've had a week off, and they've got a couple more days until they kick off their series against the Moose Jaw Warriors on Friday. But they're firing on all cylinders. Really good depth. Connor Geeky is just an absolute man amongst boys in the league, and Reed Dick has been outstanding. He was phenomenal in that four-game sweep of the Lethbridge Hurricanes. And you're right. I mean, going into that series, not a lot of people, I think, thought that Lethbridge would be able to win the series, given what Swift Current and Chad Leslie was able to do in adding to their group, and had a really good second half after the WHL trade deadline, one of the better teams in the league, if not the best team in the league post-deadline. And so I think it was an uphill climb for Lethbridge, but Lethbridge played well in the series. They just got, they ran into a really hot goaltender, and Swift Current was a little bit more apt to the timely goal, and their depth kind of won them the series, along with what Reed Dick was able to do. Had a 33 save shutout in game one and stood on his head in game number four. And despite giving up four goals in a game four that saw Swift Current score in double overtime to advance to the second round. So it was a tough series, and the third straight year for Lethbridge that they've been swept in the first round. If you go back to 2022, they lost to Edmonton in the first round before Edmonton went on to win the championship. Last year, they lost to Moose Jaw in the first round, and this year, Swift Current. So it's certainly a tough pill to swallow for everybody around the Lethbridge Hurricanes and the community and the fans. But I will say this, I do like the returning nucleus for the Hurricanes ahead of next year as you look ahead to the 24-25 season, but definitely a tough pill to swallow, but not unlike a lot of other teams that had their first round playoffs come to a quick close.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we were talking about this before we started recording. Four sweeps this year, and that seems to be a growing trend in the WHL over the last couple of maybe two, three seasons, or since COVID. This has become sort of the norm that we're seeing more sweeps.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was curious because I you had messaged to me to do this, and I was like, okay, well, I'm going to do a little bit of research, as I do, because I like to be as prepared as possible. And the 3 years prior to COVID, so the three playoffs prior to COVID, that's the 2017, 2018, and 2019 playoffs, in the first rounds across the league, there were 135 games played, which averages out to 5.63 games per series.
Okay.
There were six sweeps, seven game sevens, seven 6-game series, and five game series. Since COVID, so 22, 23, 24, 115 games in the first round, which equates to a 4.79 games per series, 11 sweeps in the last 3 years, eight series that ended in five, only four series went 6 games, and just the 1 7-game series in the first round over the last 3 years, that being Saskatoon and Regina last year, Connor Bedard willing the Pats to a seventh and deciding game, which Saskatoon ultimately won. And it's an interesting stat number. To me, it kind of shows the balance of play in terms of what we've seen in the league. You look before COVID, you had teams that were good and teams that added to their roster. Since coming out of COVID, we've seen the era of the super team, if you will, right? I mean, Edmonton, when they won in 2022, they went all in because they had the assets to do that. Mm-hmm. Kurt Hill did a remarkable job in bringing in big name players like Caden Gooley and other pieces to set them over the top. Luke Prokop last year, Winnipeg really loaded up. So too did Seattle. And this year, we saw teams load up as well. Connor Geeky going to Swift Current, Moose Jaw, who swept Brandon in the first round, loading up and bringing in Matthew Savoy and other pieces throughout the course of the year. Saskatoon, of course, lost game one, but then effectively swept the Prince Albert Raiders in four straight. They loaded up. So I think the competitive balance through the course of the regular season seems fine, but then you get to the playoffs and now the big boys come out to play. And those teams that do the big add at the deadline or throughout the course of the year to really put themselves in a position to be a team that goes on a long run, now the big boys come to play, and they turn up the heat when the playoffs come. So if I look at those numbers, and I mean, you're talking about effectively a whole game less per series across the league in the three playoffs since COVID and the three playoffs pre-COVID. It's certainly an interesting number, and I think that's why, just because it's historically been a top seed league, quite frankly. And when you have the top four teams in each conference fancying themselves as contenders mm-hmm. and doing their due diligence and going and adding, it kind of makes things interesting when you think about the first round and then ultimately as we get into the second round here. But it just kind of surprised me. I had a feeling it was a little bit less than what we had seen pre-COVID. I didn't think it was going to be as substantial as the numbers were when I was bored and crunching them.
Well, and that takes us to the second round. We've got the top three teams in each conference moving on and the number five team in each conference moving on, with Kelowna upsetting, kind of with air quotes, against the Wenatchee Wild. I think a lot of people thought Kelowna would win that series. Wenatchee, being a seller at the trade deadline, was going in opposite directions in the standings, as Kelowna was, who had been playing pretty good down the stretch. And in the East, a Medicine Hat and Red Deer. I don't know what you made of that series going into it. To me, it was Medicine Hat's offense against Red Deer's defense, and defense won out in the end. What do you think of those two series?
Yeah, the Kelowna and Wenatchee one is actually the only series across the league this year that went to a sixth game, past five. And I wasn't sure. I think I picked Wenatchee to win the series just because of the players that they had. You know, they still had Graham Sword and Briley Wood, a former Hurricane, had such a terrific season and was outstanding in the playoff series. But Kelowna came out on top. Red Deer, I had picked Red Deer to win that series. The second half of Medicine Hat wasn't as good as their first half, in large part due because they had been without Caden Lindstrom for a long time since pre-Christmas. Mm-hmm. And that's a tough transition to come back after missing almost 4 months of hockey and expect to be a really key cog in a team to win a playoff series. And the goaltending was sub-900 for Medicine Hat post-deadline once they traded Evan May with Zach Zahara and Ethan McCallum. But that's a Medicine Hat team that, you know, is going to be an absolute wagon next year, I think. And they've just got so many pieces up front, and their goaltending will take a big step forward. But that Red Deer team, I think, probably safe to say, and I think the fact that they made a coaching change as late as they did, relieving Derek Walser and bringing in Dave Struch, I think is safe to say a team that underperformed most of the year. Mm-hmm. And that's a team that I think, what did they start 15-0 last year? I think out of the gate, they set a new CHL record and a really large nucleus returning from that team, save Christopher Sedov and Ben King, who were, you know, obviously really good pieces to that team that had a great year the year prior under Steve Konowalczyk. And I just think they kind of underwhelmed and underperformed most of the season. They went on really good winning streaks, and then they had a couple of bad losing streaks. And so being able to really bring things together, and Ty Uchez, really good player. Chase Wutzke had a tremendous season as the rookie goaltender there, and they just play such a sturdy Brent Sutter style of hockey, and they got back to that mentality, I think, and that identity once they made the coaching change and brought in Dave Struch, that I kind of liked Red Deer going into that series. So I wasn't surprised that they won the series against Medicine Hat. I was surprised that it was as quick as it was, because I thought that would be a series that went at least six.
Yeah.
But sometimes experience versus youth, sometimes that can come, you know, and experience overrides youth. And I think in that instance, it did, with Red Deer going to the second round last year and being the casualty of a reverse sweep to Saskatoon, who coincidentally they'll meet in the second round again this year. I think that experience really helped Red Deer, where Medicine Hat, they barely got in last year. They ran into that juggernaut team in Winnipeg and were out in four. This was a good learning experience for Medicine Hat, who's going to be chocked full of really good 18-year-olds next season.
All right, well, that's a good segue to the Red Deer and Saskatoon series here this year. You mentioned a reverse sweep. Red Deer almost swept Saskatoon last year, getting up 3-0. But then the Blades came back and won the next four in a row. I mean, a great rivalry now between these two teams. Did you see Red Deer being able to pull it off this year, or is Saskatoon just too much?
I think Saskatoon's just too good. Quite frankly, I think Saskatoon will win the series, but I think Red Deer will give them all that they can handle. Before I mentioned Chase Wutzke and the terrific season that he had and continues to have, won a weekly award this week with the Western Hockey League for his performance in the first round. And they've got a really good, hard, heavy defense. You think of Hunter Mayo and that group behind him. Max Lindgren's a really good player for Red Deer as well. And Kai Uchaz. I think Trevor Wong had such a terrific season, and Saskatoon has a lot of really good players. But I think Kai Uchaz might be the best well-rounded player in that series, maybe in the league. When you look at what he was able to do as an overager this year and really kind of bringing together the full complement, you know, terrific in the faceoff circle, really good defensively, obviously really good offensively, was a 50-goal guy last year, didn't quite get to that mark this season. So I think Red Deer will certainly give Saskatoon a test, but I think the Blades are just too deep. I think they're too good. The one area that I would be a little bit wary about with Saskatoon is the goaltending, but Evan Gardner came in and won all four starts that he was in the net for the Blades. So if I had to handicap it, I would say the goaltending matchup would go Red Deer's favor. I think the defense matchup would go probably Red Deer's favor, although Saskatoon's defense is just so solid, and they've got the best defenseman in the series in Tanner Molendyke. But then the forward group is certainly in favor of Saskatoon, and I think when you get into a playoff series, depth usually prevails, and I think Saskatoon's just deeper, and so I would say betting man, Saskatoon in six.
I agree, and really interesting that both teams look like they'll be going with rookie netminders head-to-head in Wutzke and Gardner. That could be an interesting matchup for sure. Let's go to Moose Jaw and Swift Current. I was asked about this yesterday. I said I wish we were playing best of nines because this could be an epic series. The Warriors and the Broncos, there's so much talent. I don't know how you really pick between them. I'll go first on this one, but I like the Broncos' defense and goaltending better, but it's not by all that much, although I think Reed Dick is probably head and shoulders better than what Moose Jaw has between the pipes. The Warriors' forwards are so strong and move the puck so quickly and so well and efficiently. I think this could be a fantastic series. What do you think?
I agree. I think it's a seven-game series, and it might be a recency bias because I saw Swift Current in the first round and I didn't get to see Moose Jaw except for the highlights in one game. But I think Swift Current wins in seven games. And it kind of gives me 2018 playoff vibes. Remember in 2018, you had Regina, Swift Current, and Moose Jaw that all really loaded up. Of course, Regina was hosting the Memorial Cup that year, and Swift Current made all the moves at the deadline to bring in the Josh Andersons and the Matteo Gennaros and the Beck Malensteins and the Giorgio Estefans and the Stuart Skinners. They really went all in. And that second round between Moose Jaw and Swift Current, which went the distance, seven games, and Swift Current prevailed. I get deja vu with this series to that series because two really exceptional teams. But when you break it down, as we did with the Red Deer Saskatoon series, I like Swift Current's goaltending better. Jackson Unger had a terrific season for the Warriors, but Reed Dick has been on another level since coming back from injury. Defensively, I think the best defenseman in the series certainly is Moose Jaw's Denton Matejczuk, and he plays 30-35 minutes a night, so it's hard to argue against him. But Swift Current's defense is just so big, pretty good in terms of mobility, and their second pair in the Lethbridge series was Ryan McCleary and Tyson Galloway, two overagers. They had Dvorak and Pickering together as a top pair, and that McCleary-Galloway defense pair was certainly a game changer in the series against Lethbridge. So I would lean Swift Current just because they're a little bit bigger. They can play that heavier style. And then I think the forward groups are probably a saw off with probably Moose Jaw winning, I would think, because Jagger Furkus and Braden Yeager are just exceptional players. Matthew Savoy, we all know what he does.
Yeah.
So I would lean Moose Jaw on the forward group. But I just think in this instance, I talked about Saskatoon being the difference in that series, probably being the depth up front. I think both teams in Moose Jaw and Swift Current are equally deep. But I think when you saw that off, I think the goaltending will be the difference, and that's why I think Reed Dick and the Swift Current Broncos will win in seven games. But that's going to be, to me, that's the series to watch right now in the playoffs. All the other series are going to be great, yeah. But I think that one's going to be exceptional.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head with that description. Let's get out to the Western Conference. Prince George and Kelowna, the Cougars are so hot down the stretch. I think what they have, 19 games to close out the season where they didn't lose in regulation, 17-0-2, something like that. I mean, they just continued on that hot streak. Can Kelowna compete here?
I'm not sure they can, and that's no disrespect to the Kelowna Rockets and what they've been able to do in the second half. And TJ Ginla could be a game changer in that series for sure. I think he tied or set the Kelowna Rockets record for most goals in a single playoff series with 8. For the Rockets in that Wenatchee series and his second half, I quite frankly, I think he's really put his game to another level and has really upped his draft stock as we get toward the NHL draft and where TJ Ginla will go in the first round and how high. I think he's probably played himself into a top 15 selection. Calgary Flames, wouldn't that be something to see the Calgary Flames take Jerome Ginla's son in the first round, kind of going to be in the wheelhouse of where the Flames pick. But I think TJ Ginla has had such a great season. But in terms of depth, and that's what we've kind of been talking about, and I think is such a game changer in the playoffs, Prince George just is so much deeper than the Kelowna Rockets. And the Rockets have had a really good season, and they didn't start out great, but they really found their stride in the second half, and a great job by their coaching staff there. But I think Prince George is they're the favorite in the West. And so I think Prince George wins that series in five, just because their elite players are so much, more elite, I think, than the Kelowna Rocket players. And they've got more of them. I just think that's going to be the difference for sure. But I don't think Kelowna is going to go down without a fight. They're going to go swinging and they're going to play hard and they're going to play heavy. And they're going to give Prince George all they can handle game to game. But I think ultimately Prince George prevails.
Yeah, I'll say five as well for Prince George. But I won't be shocked if it's a four-game sweep again for the Cougars. And I agree that depth is just too much, in my opinion, for Kelowna to handle right now. That takes us to Portland and Everett. I really like the Portland Winterhawks. I think they've got the right age group right now to be competing for a league championship. Everett doesn't ever seem to falter. They always seem to be kind of under-the-radar contenders. And this year, again, right there. And I mean, not that far off. 6 points difference. They're neck and neck, and they were hotter down the stretch than Portland was. Maybe on paper they're closer than what my head is telling me, because I think Portland should win this series. But man, I keep underestimating Everett, and that's my fault. What do you think?
Yeah, Everett's done such a great job, and to think that they're going to get Landon DuPont next year, you know, who is given exceptional status this year. Of course, that goes back to the Olin Zellweger trade last year with Kamloops Blazers. So you're going to have a 95-point team, a 45-win team, a second-round team picking first overall. Tip of the cap to Dennis Williams and everybody within the Everett Silvertips organization. But you look at and you reference the ending to the season. This is a pick'em, I think. You look at Everett's last 10 games, 9-0-0-1. They didn't lose the game in regulation, their final 12 regular season games, and then dispatched Vancouver in the first round. And then Portland, they swept Victoria. They ended the season 8-0-2. So you can couple that 12-0-2 in their last, 16 games, 9-0-2 to end the season. So I think this is similar to the Swift Currents and Moose Jaw series. I think this is a series that goes the distance. I think it's a seven-game series. And I think Portland comes out on top, but I wouldn't be surprised if Everett does too. You look at the players on both teams. Dominic Raymond's just a terrific player. Ben Hemmerling, the Vegas Golden Knight prospect, is terrific. Austin Roost, of course, is a Nashville pick. Julius Mietinen is the rookie of the year in the U.S. division. He's been terrific and a pretty good 1-2 tandem in goal with Tyler Palmer, the Fernie product, and Ethan Chadwick, who's the older brother of the Hurricanes defenseman Noah Chadwick, who's a Leafs prospect. That's a pretty good tandem. And then you look at Portland, and you're right. You talk about age groups, and they have an abundance of 04s. They probably, I say probably, I think they had the best group of overagers this season with James Stephon, Gabe Clausen, and Jack O'Brien. I just, their group is loaded for bear. They went and got Nate Danielson. So I think Portland wins, but I think that's a series that goes the distance as well. I think seven games.
You and I are both picking the same four teams to come out of the second round. The travel in the what would be the conference finals, Saskatoon and Strathcurren, pretty close. Prince George and Portland,
not so close.
Prince George and Portland, not so close. Could that be a factor when we get to the actual final? If it is those four teams.
Yeah, I think it could. I would hazard a guess that with Portland, hypothetically speaking, of course, I think I would hazard a guess that if it is Prince George and Portland, they would probably do a 2-3-2 as opposed to a 2-2-1-1-1 playoff format. I know Prince George and Spokane had a 2-3-2. Ultimately, it was a four-game sweep, so it didn't matter for Prince George. So I would think that it would be a 2-3-2, but that's, what, 19 hours on a bus or something like that, 17 hours? I'm not super familiar with the West travel, but I do know that's a long way as opposed to the 2.5 hours that it would be for Saskatoon and Strathcurren or Saskatoon and Moose Jaw. I do think travel would play a factor for sure. But the one thing that I'll say about the Prince George Cougars, assuming that they would be the team that prevails in that series, they're used to it. They're used to the travel. They do it all year. It's nothing new for the Prince George Cougars. Portland, they travel a lot too. That way, like the Western Conference travel is not great. I think the Eastern Conference travel is certainly a lot better. So those teams are kind of used to it. They're built for it. They expect that. But I do think that, you know, you talk about the grind of a playoffs in four rounds. It would be a factor. But once you get to the final, you get to fly. Travel the same. You're not on a bus all that much. So I think it would maybe play a factor, but I'm not sure if it would be too much of a factor.
Good points. All four series start on Friday. Really looking forward to the second round in the Dub playoffs. This year should be some spectacular hockey. And I know you're looking forward to the AJHL final. Dustin, I really appreciate your time, man. This has been terrific. Thanks for doing this.
Hey, thanks. Thanks for having me on. I'll have the WHL playoffs on one screen. I'll have the Masters tournament on another, and I'll be keeping tabs on the AJ final too. Who knew?
Dustin Forbes, the voice of the Lethbridge Hurricanes / the Calgary Canucks in the Alberta Junior Hockey League for the finals, doing some fill-in duty there. The guy can do it all. My opinion, one of the best, if not the top broadcaster in the Western Hockey League right now. I think he calls a terrific game. If you haven't had a chance to listen to Dustin in the past, check out a Lethbridge Hurricanes game or go back and check out the highlight packs because the Hurricanes always put together a really good highlight pack as well. Go look at some of the clips from round one and you'll see what I mean. Who are your picks to come out of the second round of the WHL? You've got Saskatoon against Red Deer. I'm going to say the Blades in six. Then you have Strathcurren starting on the road against the Moose Jaw Warriors. Even though Strathcurren is tops in the CHL Central Division, that's only good for the first round. So in the second round, they will start on the road. And I like the way Dustin framed it. I think their forwards, a little bit different, but quality-wise, overall, kind of a saw-off. I think it's higher end for Moose Jaw, but maybe more depth for Strathcurren, some unheralded guys. So they might be deeper up front, but the name recognition is stronger with Moose Jaw, just speaking about the forwards right now. Now, then when you go to the blue line, if you put all the defensemen in this series in a hat and you decided you're going to list them one by one, who's the top defenseman? Stenton Mateychuk. But then the next three or four guys might be all from Strathcurren. So the Warriors have the star power on the blue line, but Strathcurren, they're not lacking in that department, but they're also deeper defensively, and I think you have to give Reed Dick the nod in net. So I think it's going to be a lengthy series, but I'm going to go with Strathcurren as well, which would set up Strathcurren and Saskatoon in the Eastern Conference Final, if that was the case. Out west, I do think Prince George is going to be too much for the Kelowna Rockets. It wouldn't surprise me if it's a four-game sweep, but out of respect for Kelowna and what they were able to do in the first round and the way they've been playing down the stretch, I'm going to give them a game, but five games for Prince George to win that series. And the other one, the Portland Winterhawks and the Everett Silvertips. I'm going to take Portland in six, but there's a large part of me who's thinking I'm really underrating the Everett Silvertips. But if that's the case, so be it. In my final for the Western Conference, I've got Prince George and Portland. And in the East, Saskatoon and Swift Current. And then I think we're basically flipping coins. What about you? Let me know on Twitter, at @TPS_Gee. That is going to do it for this week's episode. Next week, I believe, we'll have some U18 to talk about. I think Canada's roster will be named early in the week. I think before this weekend, we'll know the management and the coaching staff for Hockey Canada's entry to the World U18. So I believe tentative plans to talk about that with somebody from Hockey Canada next week on the show. We'll have the results of the Frozen Four. The AJHL will be in the final. BCHL playoffs will be well underway. The USHL will be getting close to kicking off as well. So as you know, an exciting time of year. We're going to tackle as much of that as we can, as we do every week here on the program. Thank you to everyone who has been signing up to be a patron at patreon.com/thepipelineshow. Lots of people signing up for the 7-day free trial, and then many of them sticking around after that and extending, which is great to see. Any way that you listen to the show, I really appreciate it, whether you're downloading it as a podcast from Spotify or Apple Podcasts or the Podbean or directly from SoundCloud. Maybe you're just getting the links when I post them on Twitter or X. However you're getting your podcast from, I appreciate it. And if you're listening at edmontonsportstalk.com, then that means it's either a Saturday afternoon or a Monday evening. And I appreciate you tuning in that way as well. Terrific job by everybody at Edmonton Sports Talk. That said, get out and watch some junior college hockey so that we can talk about it next week right here on The Pipeline Show. It's brought to you by Wilhauk Beef Jerky. And my name, it's Guy Flaming. See ya!